Bien, gracias. Vamos a...
Thank you very much. Let's commence the press conference. Good morning to the press conference. Welcome to the press conference of the film Colossal, included in the official section outside competition in the festival at San Sebastian. We have the director Nacho Vigalondo with us, one of the cast, Austin Stowell, and the producer Maikari Pina. So therefore, if you deem, you can start asking your questions. We have a first question here on my left, I think. Hope you can hear me, Mr. Stowell. Hi, Nacho. Could you... this film seems like an anti-romantic comedy. That is, it's completely... The way it develops, the role of the woman is completely different there. Could you go further in depth there? And then also the issue of everyone's individual responsibility and how that affects global issues. That is, what did you want to tell there? What's the story you want to tell? And because there's this guy that's stepping on people everywhere on the other side of the world. What's going on there? As regards to the romantic comedy, this is a genre which is quite complex. It's a genre I love very much. It's always made me enjoy it myself. And sometimes it's a genre I hate. Romantic comedies, when they come to mind, when you think of them, they have a bit of a controversial policy or politics. Romantic comedy that I saw when I was younger, it was like harassment. For example, if you shoot a wedding because you're in love with the bride, well, that's all well and good because she ends up going out with you and she doesn't marry the guy that she's supposed to marry. So it's a type of discourse that over time I've confronted it. Yeah, the film is, without being a romantic comedy, does play with the idea of knowing that it's a romantic comedy and you know that, and it destroys it, really. So what elements in the film go against the elements that the film shows? So for it's like punching the film in the face, really, at the end of the day. Second question, what was that about? Oh, I think she's talking about individual responsibility. Microphone. Yes. We've always used in the bar, we've always talked about that evil that takes place when you press a button and someone dies on the other side of the world, or when you press a button and a bomb falls on people. That's displacing blame when destruction, but the victim's not near you, it's on the other side of the world. So we've always talked about the button which is pressed by the red button that's pressed by presidents in different countries, and we know what it means on the internet to damage, harm someone at a distance via the internet, for example, without the fear of having to confront your impulses because your victim's very far away. You don't see them, so therefore it's not really happening. And the film, to a certain extent, does deal with this issue of doing things remotely or at a distance and not believing or thinking that those things can cause damage. Hi. I would like to ask you, Nacho, the cast, how did you achieve this great quality cast, Anne Hathaway, Jason, Austin, etc. Could you, looking back from your first short films, whether at a given moment you thought that you were end up making a film with these, a big feature film with these great stars? A lot of money. Answering the second question, no, not at all. I had a plan. No, I don't even have a plan. I'm not going down a path that's strategically set up. No, not at all. Vis-a-vis my career, I never thought I'd dream of going to the Oscars and making a film of this size. And I'd like to make a smaller film the next film. I don't know. Just around the corner at home. as we've done sometimes, but I would also like to make a larger film than this film, for example. More than following a prefixed path, a preset path, I'd like to have the freedom to be able to do one thing or the other without having to be pending expectations or without having to follow a fixed or a set script, shall we say. And my first question, your first question was the cast, I think, is... Well, Asking two questions at the same time is a bad idea, because if they're not linked one to the other, if they're two questions, they're once linked to the other, but if they're different, it's very complicated to go back. What was the first one? About the cast. Here we go. Okay, I wanted to tell a heroic story. The grand achieving all of these actors in the cast, I must say that it has been scandalously easy to do so. Anne Hathaway, Jason Sudeikis, they read the script, and they offered to play the role, to participate and play their roles. It wasn't difficult. Through agencies, these were the first proposals, and I thought there was no one better that could do that. Not because of their quality on screen, but because of what their own names project within the film. How their own names bring about expectations of the film is something different to what you expect, what you see at the end of the day. And apart from the main actors, we got people. Austin Stowell came along, and those that have seen the film, his role is only appears in very few scenes. If I'd have known he'd have played that role, his role would have been longer. And his presence would have been bothersome, because he would have been there all the time. But I wanted to calm down this frustration. I don't know, bringing him out in all of my seven films, because we've got a really good relationship that I want to confess, taking advantage that we've got the press in front of you. We want to say that we love each other. And that this is a great, we don't know how far this is going to go. We don't know where we're going. Austin, could you probably say a few words there, or what?
It's all true. What do I say about this guy? I was embarrassed that I did not know about Nacho Vigalondo before this film, but when the script was given to me, I was told to watch Time Crimes, and I watched it that evening, and that was basically all I needed to know. To get involved with this project. And then I start hearing about names like Anne Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis and Tim Blake Nelson, and it was a no-brainer for me, because I'm poor. I had a very different take on for this role. I'm used to playing the quarterback and the soldier and the cop, the lawyer, things like that. And this is a guy who was very outside of that box. This guy is we say in the States, we say a sheep. He doesn't know how to think for himself. All these characters who are making these very outlandish actions in this movie, controlling monsters and dealing with the power struggle and what that would happen, how you would act if you actually had that power to destroy or protect the world. And then you have Joel, who can't really figure out what he wants for breakfast. And so it was a challenge for me, and but such a great experience to work with those incredible people, and of course, with my lover, Nacho.
Tenías tú aquí.
Hi, I would like to know why I would like to know why you decided to destroy Seoul in particular. Why Seoul, but destroy Seoul? Well, we had to find a city that was exactly on the other side of the world, and it was the big difference vis-a-vis the context of the film. So something completely different, that is to say, for it to be, visually you could feel completely opposed and different to what you see represented for the rest of the time in the film. For it to be a film within the film, that is to say, in that sense, the city of Seoul, thought we fitted in perfectly. Yeah, there's another question over here. I don't like to ask authors about the intention of the work, because the work speaks for itself, but I have a question which is quite compelling, but perhaps you could clear it up. The film talks about people who feel very good in bars, comfortable in bars. This brings, but nevertheless, their egos cause problems abroad, and then she goes back to the place where she was born to, can you call it a genre of self-biopic? autobiopic, I think that's what he's saying, but nevertheless, it's got to do with the city and the country town, that is to say, and it uses the country town as a final, a mistaken final destination. And I'm from Madrid, for example, but I come from Cabezón de la Sal. And for me, Cabezón de la Sal is the place where I come from, but it is also, sometimes I project myself and I go, well, it's, I speculate, and what if I've got to go back town with the tail between my legs? And the film addresses those fears and those mental spaces. The film stems from pretty harsh feelings and hard, tough feelings, that is, they better said. But in that sense, when you write, one projects oneself into the characters when you write a screenplay, albeit you might not think it, but the characters are form part of yourself. And in that sense, the failure that she experiences throughout the film, or the failure she has to confront, derives into, this is something that she doesn't want, but that's a confession that I'm doing openly. It's something to do with my own fears when I wrote the script. Hi, good morning, Nacho. A couple of questions that are not connected to each other. I'm sorry. The first has to do, the protagonist, Spanish directors, the main characters are very, a lot of men with a lot of testosterone, and fortunately, there's a film that's a woman who's got a strong personality and she's very powerful. I would like you to talk about how you wrote about her. Was it clear from the beginning that the leading role had to be a woman? And also the design of the monsters that are very different, each of them, if you see them on screen. Where did the idea of a one monster, which is more metallic, and the other one's a bit more organic or more animal-like, I don't know how to say this. Answering your second question, which is easier, when you design a monster in a film, everything you project against that monster has to have a certain meaning behind it. It's got to have a certain value, shall we say, narratively speaking. Be the monster one way. When you've got two monsters, however, that are confronting each other, you've got to bear in mind that one represents what the other doesn't represent. And if one of the monsters is more organic and more curves in the shape of the monster and with a specific charisma, the other monster's got to be more metallic, more jagged-edged, and with more corners. Not only a literal color, but also an emotional color, a color when you see it on screen. So when you see that they're fighting against each other, it's got to be quite clear what your point of view is when you're seeing that fight. And your first question that I think I remember now, my memory is not what it used to be, traveling around. My memory, I lose it very simply when I travel a lot. Well, good. It was in my mind the fact that the heart, not the heart, all the contrary, the stupid idea of using big monsters as an avatar of a character. The giant consequences happen on the other side of the world. And what if someone falls down here, and on the other side of the world, a monster falls and knocks down four buildings? That was in my head. But I didn't write the script until I found a narrative that was interesting. An emotional side, not more than a narrative, shall we say, to know what the film was going through, one character or two characters. And that didn't arrive until I understood. And instead of being two men fighting against each other, it had to be a man and a woman. As soon as that idea arrived, I thought I knew exactly what the film was going to be about and where it was going to take us. Up until that moment, it was just an idea that possibly quite curious, but also, in essence, quite stupid, because I defend the fact that films have got to have a starting point and that have got to be as naive as possible and stupid and childlike, but the journey's got to take us somewhere else, okay? And the truth is, I'd never made a film from the point of view openly feminine, shall we say, but I do insist that all of the characters are the same. I've never made a film. I think the truth is, to talk about certain types of toxic masculinity, I've always talked about this, but it's the first time I do it from a feminine point of view. Up until now, I've always talked about I've talked about masculinity in terms that are more or less terrifying from the vision of terrifying men themselves. But, and I think in all of my films, I've introduced something of this nature, not as denunciating, for example, other men, so to speak, but to question myself at the same time. Linking to this, Nachos, congratulations. I had a great time watching the film yesterday, and I like to see that you still feel like playing, which is great. And what I would like to ask you is, and linking to what my colleague has just said, the fact that the man is the robot and the woman is the monster, albeit she's good, is there any further reading into that, or it is what it is, what you see, and that's it? Okay, the film has five layers of meaning, progressively, deeper and deeper and deeper until you get to the final layer, which is almost a revelation. Vis-a-vis the state of the issue, state of things, but I'm not going to explain more than that, because I think that all artifacts, which is a narrative or artistic, whatever you want to call it, shouldn't have the author in order to solve those kinds of issues. It's got to talk for itself. Each film has to have the freedom to speak for itself and to turn into what people see in the film. When they watch it, I'm horrible when there's a label in a museum that tells you what the painting is like or whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? And I think that destroys the piece of work, art. Here on the front line, please. Hi again. Austin, in English.
Your role, bearing in mind that your relationship with one of your best friends is something that goes from a very close friend to a total jerk that wants to kill people. I imagine your character knew that from the beginning. So how do you manage that? Were you really friends, or?
I think, like many times in life, you are friends with people because of circumstance, because of location, because of your social position. You know, in terms of. You know, how rich you are and what kind of places you hang out in. Joel is a guy who, like I was saying before, you know, he's a follower. And he doesn't know how to make decisions for himself, so it's very easy for him to fall into the trap of narcissism and, Oscar is becoming this, you know, egomaniac, and Joel doesn't have the courage or the bravery to stand on his own and say, no, don't do this. He just continues to go along with this. And I've had a theory of my own when I first read the script. I thought that all the characters, all the male characters in the script are actually the voices inside Gloria's head. That they are different.
Remember the first Skype conversation we had?
Yeah.
We talk about that.
Right.
Like all those guys being a projection of.
Exactly. And we all have those voices in our head that say, you know, we can do that. You know, we're going to squash the world and everything is ours. And gimme, gimme, gimme. And then there's that voice in your head that also goes, I need to step back and take a look at this further. And then we have the thinker. Garth is this. This guy who's going off on these random stories that lead nowhere, just like our thoughts in our head. Sometimes it gets to somewhere we think we're kind of like I'm babbling right now. We think that we have these grand points in our head and it sounds so amazing, and then you get to the end and you think, what the hell was the point of that? So, to get back to your question about why Joel and Oscar are together, it's because they need each other to a certain extent. You know, Oscar needs the support of somebody who will always agree with him, who knows that he's, you know, we all like to have yes men around us. And Joel is looking for direction in life. So I think it's a balanced relationship.
Thank you. Hi. Well, Nika, and for Nacho, it's a question. I've got a financing. How did you get? But what draws my attention is I don't find any Spanish names apart from you and the crew. That is to say, the fact that production is completely Canadian, I would like you to talk about this, if you'd be so kind. Thank you. The truth is what Nacho talked about, that is to say, the moment Anne Hathaway said yes, well, financing took off up until that we never had access to up until then. And then the issue that it was Canadian, at the end of the day, there are a series of production reasons. On the one hand, tax incentives that we had there, it was difficult to compete with in vis-a-vis doing it here. And it was complicated to bring the shoot the film here because, amongst other things, I was already pregnant. And so there are a series of reasons there. Also, for example, to make the locations, for example, to build an American city in Spain would increase the budget as well. So therefore, there are a whole series of reasons for which we decided to shoot there, okay? In Canada, in Vancouver, I think she said. Nacho, did you want to add anything there? No, well, I'm confessing that the film is, all of the films I've made have a lot of elements that are autobiographical, more or less coded in that way, but each film is a part of your life. There's a moment, and when I wrote the first version of the script, the title of the film was Santander, I swear, Santander, because Santander sounded like the name of, hey, look, here comes Santander, you know, it scares the life out of you. And yes, I've seen it. Yes, it's true. Yeah, I saw the script. The original title of the film was Santander. We went from Santander to Colossal. In my mind, they're synonymous because Santander is colossal for me. And for no matter how you try to portray as a novelist, an author, moments of your life to tell a story, but finally you've got to subject it to the logistics of financing and to export the context of the film to wherever you've got to do it. And that's also makes you feel humbled, because no matter which way you focus the film in an environment that's familiar, you've got to learn to project what you've got in unthought of places and to shoot films way away from home if need be. Hi, congratulations. I thought it was a very daring film and also fun at the same time. I had a great time. How do you manage that chemistry between Anne Hathaway, who does a great job, and the audience from the beginning, that people are totally linked to Anne Hathaway, albeit we know she's drunk and she kills people on the other side of the world. But there's a certain chemistry. How did you manage to achieve that? Well, the first time I had held a conversation with Anne Hathaway, first we had a meeting. Nacar and I, we went to New York to meet her, and we had a meeting which more or less we discovered it was almost a test to see how we got along. And in that first meeting, well, especially she showed me that she understood the script in depth, the five different layers that I was talking about before. It was perfectly clear to her mind, and they were clearly defined for her. I thought she was great fun and very intelligent and obviously a star with whom to work with. But then in the second meeting that we held at her house, we were exchanging anecdotes of drunk sessions, of being getting drunk. We confessed that there were moments in our past, both of us, that we didn't have complete control of things, and we talked a lot about the things that we wrecked, but at a lower level, that we'd carried out when we were drunk. And that dialogue and those confession session, we defined we could see how Gloria was going to be on the screen. It's a very delicate issue because she's got to win the audience from the first moment, and the audience has to feel an accomplice but she's not an innocent character, and we want to pay justice to the character at the same time and to not believe that cover her, make her feel almost sanctified, they say, because we confess anecdotes of when we're drunk. We're also confessing weaknesses and things that we would desire to never have happened in our past at a given moment. Hi. Hi, Nacho over here. I'm standing up. Javier Suarez from... I want to congratulate you for the film. It was a real party watching it. Those of us who are looking forward to seeing it, we had entertainment, mixture of genres, craziness. It was great. It's going to bring about love-hate relationship. It's not going to leave anyone indifferent. It's either you like it or you don't. And I'm in the first group. I like it. So therefore, the film is that it's one of your films that can, with Anne Hathaway and the rest of the cast. What will that be? Because you've got to see a lot of audiences come to see your, more audience seeing your film. How's that going to be affect? How does that affect you? Well, the film has been sold already to a distributor in the U.S., and just the scale of the sales there means the film is going to be completely different to any other film that I've made in the past. Being very pragmatic, the film already has a scale which is much greater than any other film that I've made in the past. So, and in that sense, I feel a bit... the lack of pressure that I've had up until now, that's to have to represent the film everywhere and put your face everywhere when you go. And the film is a film with Anne Hathaway, to a certain extent, makes me feel much more relaxed and makes the film is a completely different experiment, so to speak. So, and answering to what you said as regards to the tension the film creates, I'm a cinephile more than before a director. I love movies, that is to say, and I love certain directors, and the directors that I like the most have always generated tension and they've always been controversial. It's time. Time condemns and blesses people as it goes by, but a director should desire or should wish to make films on the knife edge that generate discussion, that is to say, controversy. And that, for me, is to aspire. It's like haute cuisine, that's to make, that can be projected over time, and that it generates, the film generates discourse and discussion. Everyone liked the film first up, it's like eating fast food. I wouldn't like that. Another question? Hi, can you hear me? The Climax is an edit of all of these scenes that you see when at the end. Could you talk about how that was addressed and why at the end you don't show the consequences of what happens in Jason's character? Yes, I want to answer, but without giving too much spoilers. What happens with Jason? How do we do this? What happens with Jason at the end is, I don't want to do that with Jason. I want to do that with what he represents. That's why I told it that way. Hey, what a question. What's that all about? And as regards to what you say, in the sequence itself, it's very difficult, obviously. It's tough to tell all of that with the intention that the audience never gets lost, so that the audience doesn't get lost watching it. But the procedure is the normal run-of-the-mill stuff that you do in movies or making a film. They work very tough on the storyboard. It's got to be quite clear, each of the scenes and how they've got to go, and to know that each scene is going to work as regards to the following scene. So therefore, when you shoot a scene and another scene, a counter scene, for example, you don't know how it's going to be, how you're going to edit one scene to another, because it depends upon the chemistry that the characters have. You don't know exactly when you're going to have to cut one to another. You don't plan at that level, but if you shoot a sequence that you're talking about, the climax scene, the sequence that we're talking about, it's got to be quite clear the moment that you have to cut from one scene to another. Nothing that you don't already know, obviously. Yes, another question. Another question, hi. Nacho, knowing that each shoot is tough, it's not easy, it's not a piece of cake, that is to say, I'd like to know, where did you have the best time, with Open Windows or with this film? Because Open Windows was really cool, but this one has got a lot to it as well. Well, the problem with Open Windows is that technically there was a lot of digital stuff there, and Open Windows was a prison sort of setup. It was like They were closed in. I prefer to shoot these types of scenes the way I did in this film, for example. As I asked, told you in the previous, as I answered in the first previous question, the shoot of this film, it was colossal, really. The climate that we generated, truth be said. Oh, no, sorry, extraterrestrial, he corrects himself. I think the shoot here, it developed a certain chemistry on set that one would miss, I'm going to miss, I'm sure, in the future. It's one of those films where you really, you get, it's a pity to stop shooting. We had to shoot it very quickly because of dates and time and all of those things. Boring to explain to you, but we shot most of the film in 6 weeks. Everything had to be very precise. Everything had to move very quickly, but it was great on set, on shoot, with little challenges at the same time, because you know that the film, there are a lot of fights. There's a lot of fights, and there's a lot of physical sides. Even in the United States, there's moments where there are a lot of fights and dirty fights, and there are moments in which are very physical. And our leading actress, she was 5 months pregnant, so we had to be very, very careful the way we were shooting all of that. But these are little challenges that one knows how to overcome. They weren't really real problems, but just little challenges. But even so, the shoot was a pleasure. It was very relaxed. I feel a lot of envy because I love shooting films above any other thing, and I envy all of the crew that's going to shoot another film in a month's time or in a week's time. And when I shoot and I finish the shoot, I always cross my fingers and say, I hope I don't take long to shoot another film. One final question, if anyone has a question, that is. No? Okay. Thank you very much. Sorry, there's one here. Oops, sorry, I didn't see your microphone, please. Excuse me. I didn't see you, excuse me. What have you got in hand at present? Any plans? I haven't got any idea. Something that's floating in the air, but if it was to be confirmed, it would fulfill my small dream of doing something on TV. But that, I can't say really much for the time being. TV, but I'm talking about TV in the US. And I'm writing. And more than knowing what to do, I would like to know that I've got the freedom of being able to make a film, a small film, in Spain, in Spanish, and with actors and actresses that I like very much, for example, and at the same time make a film, perhaps in the United States, with monsters and spaceships and laser rays and cars blowing up. I like that a lot as well. So therefore, I'd like to be able to not have to decide in the future, and to have it all. Okay, thank you very much, Nacho, Nakane, and Austin. Good luck with the film.